Okay.
EMS 8730.
Hello, caller? Relax, relax. We're trying to help you here.
This is not a job for everybody.
This isn't fib now.
This is not a job to get rich or stuff like that.
Calm down. Everything's going to be okay.
We're the doctors of the street. That's what we are.
Welcome to EMS Office Hours. This is Jim Hoffman.
And this is Josh Knapp. EMS Office Hours is a live, weekly EMS podcast for all EMS professionals.
Discussing a variety of EMS topics and bringing your EMS concerns to light. So turn down that scanner and turn up your speakers.
And join us to find out what's really on the minds of EMS.
Hi, it's Jim Hoffman from EMS Office Hours.
And this is Josh Knapp.
Well, once again, Josh is, having a computer challenge.
Oh, Lord.
On the Facebook app I just put on the fan page, and I don't know, I tried it with my dummy, no pun intended, Facebook profile. I had no issues, but of course Josh tries it and has issues, so.
And just so folks know why I was laughing, because 5 seconds to the show, Jim decides that's the time to start yelling at me about not liking his app.
Yeah.
So, but if you go to his Facebook app, I have actually used this EKG reference. He has it on his regular site. If you go to his EMS professional page on Facebook and you click like, it's a really good little helper for EKGs.
Yeah, it's a little something on there, and just a little like kind of treat for people if they like the page, that specific page. It'll go ahead and give them access to that download. And
if you're listening to this, you've got to go to that page. He has 4 more likes, and he makes 2,000.
Right, exactly.
That's important. Got to get there.
That's my end-of-year goal. I've been kind of stuck between 1,900 and 2,000 now for a few months. So
I feel exactly the same way, except with more fans.
Yeah, it's my selfishness. I'm not quite sure what the increase in fan base is going to do for me, but I like to just see that number get to 2,000.
Well, you get a check for $1 million from Facebook.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. Facebook Facebook starts paying you millions of dollars every month.
Absolutely.
Once you get the 2,000 mark. I forgot.
He has all this money. Why not?
Yeah, I'm rolling in it. He's
right. No, not you. I mean,
Zuckerman?
Zuckerman, yeah. He's rolling in it. I mean,
sure.
He gets $100 million to the school.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Why not support EMS?
Yeah.
So you picked a really, interesting topic, and I don't know if people out there are going to really give a crap about this topic or not. And I see that we're the only two in the chat room at this point.
Yeah. It's funny because and this is something that I struggle with week after week, is trying to pick a topic that is going to draw the listeners, draw the people into the chat room, get people involved, and get people interested in the topics. Unfortunately, each week,
I don't think anybody gives a crap, Jim.
You can't. It's hard to get people. Honestly, it's hard to get people to get involved with a lot of topics. And I don't know. I think a big part of it is that people are just too busy to care. But I think that topics like this, It reflects on the industry, and I think it can reflect on where we want to go in this industry and get out of this little box that we seem to be trapped in, with this attitude of I don't care, and this attitude of if there's nothing really in it for me, I'm not going to take a vested interest, when really, the interest should be there if you are in this industry. And one thing I will say is that I know that most of the people that listen to the show, whether it's live or, they recorded it, listening it through iTunes or something like that, the people that are listening to it are interested in the industry, and they're interested in what's going on in EMS. So,
and I think you hit it on the head. It's not that you are doing this because you want, and this is what listeners really got to understand. We don't do this because we want fans, or we want people to listen to us, or we think anything other, you know, we have a greater take on the issues at hand. We're not trying to teach anything out there. We you know, Jim and I have been involved in EMS a long time. We like it. We like the people in it. We like the profession. We think it's a profession, and it just doesn't get its due. And we want to raise these issues. We want to raise these topics so people talk about them, so you're right. aware, so it's on the radar. And once it's on the radar and once people are aware, then maybe some action takes place. But it's such a frickin' up. You know, it's who was Cepheus in putting the pushing the boulder up the hill? I mean, this is insane sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, it's,
you know, to get people to care.
The thing is, and like I said, I think most of the people that listen to the show on a regular basis, the people that, you know, listen to the archives and the iTunes and stuff like that, they are interested. They do care, and I think it's up to them to help spread the word about what we're talking about.
You think anybody actually discusses this on the bus afterwards?
Well, I mean, listen, I know that there are some people where I work that listen to the show. You know. Not necessarily when it's live, but they do listen to recorded versions of it. And, you know, I have discussed, you know, parts of the show with them after it's been recorded. And, you know, and sometimes it's like weeks after, you know, because some people don't listen to it right away. They might listen to it a week or so after we've recorded the show and after we've, you know, it's been on the blog for a little while.
So archivally, we get it down, we get the discussion down, and then it's out there, and people
right.
can reference it and say, you know, what's this about?
Yeah, and I think that it's important for people to really, you know, try to spread the word, because I think, you know, by showing that interest and showing that there is a venue out there for people to interact in, and there's
and there are other people that care.
Right, exactly. And I think that this is part of being a professional is not just this show. I mean, listen, this is really just an opinion-based, you know, show. It's our opinions. It's callers' opinions.
Hell, that's
you know.
Fact, man. We speak
yeah.
fact.
It's based on – I try to base on as much fact as I can. You know,
and
but,
I try to make up as many facts as I can.
Right.
So
and there's other shows out there that are similar, other podcasts out there that target things like education and instructors and stuff like that. But and I think that the point is that people have to realize that they need to get involved in these things. They need to be aware of these things that are out there. Opportunities to increase their knowledge base, opportunities to get involved.
And this isn't even hard stuff. You know, we're not talking like change the government. This isn't civil disobedience. You know, we're not marching in the streets for different rights or anything
yeah.
like that. We're saying, you know, if we raise the topic and raise the awareness level and start talking about these points, then the conversation spreads and grows and gets developed and eventually falls into the system that we work in, or that's the hope. Because
yeah.
you know, this whole thing about professionalism is in just as we were talking a few minutes ago before the show, you know, so many people, and probably why, you know, there's that, you know, this isn't the Rock'em Sock'em topic that we're getting 10 people on at once like some of the other topics. Like, you know, notice how many people we had when it talked about getting paid. Whoa, you know, a lot of people want to know how to get paid. But when we talk about what's professionalism, people think, Jim, when you mint that card and you get that cert, you're now a professional.
Yeah.
And that couldn't be further from the truth.
Well, the thing is, I mean, that's part of what I wanted to talk today. I mean, what is it that makes – us EMS professionals? Is it just getting that card? You know, is it the uniform that you're wearing? You know, is part of it your attitude? And you know, I think that it's a combination of these things. You know, it's important to have to look well, to present yourself well, and part of that, you know, presentation is, you know, the uniform that you're wearing. Not, you know, I'm not saying you have to walk around with a starched uniform. It's not, you know, it's not the military or something like that.
It wouldn't hurt.
It wouldn't hurt. And people that know me know that in the past, you know, that I used to starch my uniforms, and I would, my shoes would be spit shined, and this would be an everyday thing, you know, all the time. And people knew that, that was one thing I did. And people used to swear that I used to take my stuff to the dry cleaners to get that done. You know, but meanwhile, I was home with an iron and the starch and doing it.
Did anybody say that in a negative way? Honestly, did anybody say,
that's a fact.
Jim Hoffman is too clean for this job.
Right.
You're too well-pressed.
Yeah, nobody ever said that, you know.
You know, when I worked in corporate, all right, you used to say, you know, you used to defend your messy desk as a clean desk is a sign of a sick mind. But, you know, there was a sort of attitude that when you walked into somebody's office and there were papers all over the place in some sort of order, and, you know, the things, there were sticky notes on all around the computer and stuff like that, the guy was busy or the girl was busy and they were doing stuff back and forth, and that person who had nothing but the desks, you know, the pen and the desk set and the ink blotter on with no papers on their desk was totally worthless because they weren't doing any work. And
right.
We don't face that. We don't face that at all. You know, you could be humping and working and look neat, tidy, and professional. And I should leave that word out. We shouldn't use that word professional during this talk and talk around it because we're talking about what the definition is. But, you know, you can look clean and neat and tidy and still be working on the job. You can do it like a slob. You can, your shirt tails can be hanging out of your pants. You could be wearing blue jeans or dungarees, or if your organization even lets you get away with that. Or maybe they have a dress code, but they're really lax about it, so you think you're the rebel and you're wearing something anyway. But let me tell you something. You know, do you really want those jeans? Do you really want to go out in the same clothes that you're going to hang around the house in? I mean, honestly, our uniform is there for a reason. You know, if you think about hazmat, it's level D protection, you know, and it does afford you some level of protection against the stuff out there.
Well, yeah, I mean, you have to think about that. I mean, there's a purpose for it, you know, and I'm going to talk a little bit about that a little bit later when it comes to uniforms and things as well, and something I'm going to bring up that's going to probably be a touchy subject But
good.
before I get to that, you know, I want to talk about education, and this is something that I think a lot of people tend to focus on when it comes to, you know, being considered professionals. You know, where we can't be considered professionals if we don't have that college degree based, you know, paramedic certificate. It's got to be college and a bachelor's degree or you know, associate degree obtained. You know, certification. It can't be.
Wait. Say that again.
Well, a lot of people have this sense that unless you got your paramedic card through a college program, you know, a 2-year college program, that, you know, you shouldn't. You're not necessarily going to be a professional unless you've got that additional education, or that we can't be considered professionals. Like we can't be try to be considered professionals like nurses are, or other professions like that if we don't have that same level of education, you know, behind us. We can't demand that recognition without that.
I'm going to have to think about that. I mean, look, you know me. You know, I have a college degree. I've been through school, and I definitely agree, and I definitely believe that a college education helps you in more ways than you think it can. And that there's a lot of growth that goes on with the discipline that requires a higher level education, you know, something beyond high school, whether it be an associate's or a bachelor's degree or even going on to master's. But, you know, to get your feet wet, to get started, the things that you've got to know in order to do this job, a certification is, you know, even if it's an associate's degree, it's the first step. You know, there's so much more after that. I mean, why do we have to surround it around a degree?
And this is something I think we've talked about that in other recent podcasts as well. We talked about, you know, having, you know, been there, got the T-shirt type thing, you know, where, you know, there's so many other educational opportunities that are out there, you know, beyond your initial certification. I think that that is a key
that you have
factor.
To take.
Right. These are key things, I think, that, you know, as providers, we should be seeking out to increase our education, increase our knowledge base, increase our training, you know, knowing what we're doing and things like that. And I think that is part of what makes us and being professionals is getting that additional training, you know, seeking out that additional training to make us the best that we can be in our job. And I think that is part of being what being a professional is about.
Well, I think there are two sides to that coin. There's one of where how we're viewed as professionals, and viewed by the administration that we work for as professionals, and viewed by our colleagues as professionals. And when I speak colleagues, I open that up to even the doctors and the nurses in the ED where we have to bring a patient and we give them a report. They don't know what our degree is. They don't have a clue what our education is.
And that's the thing, because – and I think that's because that a lot of them realize, or they may not realize, that –
they assume.
Right. A lot of them don't realize that, you know, the paramedic that they're speaking to might have a bachelor's degree, might have even a master's degree. You know,
right.
They might not be this certification level type provider that they're maybe assuming that paramedics all are. And I think that, you know, so then you've got that perception going on.
Right.
And I think that a lot of what I'm kind of talking about in this show is that perception that all that we're talking about as far as the education and the uniforms and your attitude, you know, and the way you conduct yourself. And when you're giving that report to the nurse and to the doctor, how are you giving that report? You know, are you giving it in a professional type manner? Are you kind of just, you know, winging it? Are you, you know what I mean? And I think that perception of what we're conveying out there, whether it's, you know, our appearance and the way we present ourselves, and I think that perception is what is kind of conveying whether or not we are professionals or not.
Oh, I agree.
And not necessarily it's not necessarily this title that we have that automatically makes you professional. I mean, think about how many – even you talk about – you say colleagues like doctors and nurses. You think about how many of them do you encounter that aren't really all that professional, but they've got this title – being an MD or this title of being an RN, and right away, because they've got this title, because it entails a certain amount of education, a certain amount of dedication to get that title, you know, right away they're considered a profession, that they're a professional. But for us, it seems like, you know, since there's not really a set standard out there, I guess, or there's not really a set nationwide type thing that fits us into that title type thing, you know,
structure.
Right. You've got that. You have that perception going on, and it winds up, I think, turning onto us as the provider, you know, us as the, you know, the career EMS provider, that it's up to us to go ahead and get that perception to be so that it is that we are perceived as being professional. So
you know,
no question.
It's way, way more than what, you know, we used to say that perception is everything. And if you think about it, you know, you look at your colleagues, you look at the people you work with, you look at the people that are associated around you, you make judgments. I mean, they did this whole thing on how we choose a mate. You know, our first thing is we look at how they're dressed. Then we look at their physical appearance, and we look at how they're dressed.
I like teeth.
Yeah, you know, but and there are people that respond that way, Jim. But what do teeth tell you? Honestly, they tell you a state of health, you know.
Right.
And at that point in time, now we're starting to form our opinions already. And it's like, you know, the old saying is like, you know, best to just keep your mouth shut and let people assume that you're the fool instead of opening it and confirming, you know, and confirming all suspicion. You know, there's an aspect that we got to turn around and realize that how we present reflects on our professionalism, and even more so, how we present affects how everybody looks at us is in entirety, Okay, so you have a nurse that works in a place where, let's say it's serviced by a fairly loose organization, and the people don't really follow a dress code. They come in, they're there. I don't want to use the V word on this. I don't want to use, you know, the P, you know, professional, paid, or anything like that. But just, you know, that they have loose standards. So the people on the bus, they come in any way. Do they and the people at that time, they happen to think that, hey, my job is just diesel and getting them to the hospital. Once the patient's at the hospital, they're no longer my problem. And if they form that opinion, then they can move into a system that is like, hey, this is the continuum, chain of command, chain of ownership, chain of information on patient care. This is, you know, what was the patient doing in the field? How did things look? What was their home like? And how did they? What did you do for them? How did they react to what you did for them? And now, you know, and it's not going to matter. It's going to fall on deaf ears because, you know, everybody else there might say, hey, we work in a system that, you know, the EMS are really, truly professional. But that traveling nurse, that doctor that's coming in new, already has formed their opinion of us. And now we have an uphill battle to change that opinion.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's almost as like we wind up being our own, you know, worst enemy, and we have to keep that in mind. We have to keep in mind that there is this element of you know, how we are being perceived, and you know, you talk about, you know, the V word before, you know, and you know, and the reality is
no disparaging on volunteers, because and I actually am a volunteer. I volunteered today at the marathon, so you know, hey, you know, volunteerism is good. There's not a problem with it, but you know what, the same rules apply. And as a matter of fact, in my squad, we've actually implemented a uniform policy that is almost stricter than my professional organization. I mean, they really, you know, if you show up for a tour and you're not in your proper uniform and your uniform isn't clean, you're not on the bus.
Yeah.
You know, and that goes a long way. I mean, I can see the difference now when I come in. I mean, I used to cringe. They used to, you know, as a lot of organizations that put a lot of people on the bus, and you're training people and you're getting them through, they look at you, you know, as clowns on the bus sometimes, or, you know, whatever's going, whatever level of ignorance is, you know, that you were able to obtain a card, how the hell you did that, but you're still there. And it reflects poorly on the whole organization. And now I walk in, and they're asking me what's going on. There's a whole different look. There's a whole different respect that comes out of that.
But here's my thing with the volunteers. I mean, this is part of the thing too. And you know, you get people all the time.
Now you're gonna get the emails.
Well, here's the thing though. I don't have the issue with the
Jim
volunteers.
Doesn't like volunteers. You heard it here first, folks.
Yeah, exactly. Well, my thing is I don't have an issue with the volunteers, and you have people who will say, well, you know, if you're a volunteer, you know, you're not paid, so you're not a professional, and that's not really true. But I think the issue goes back to when we start talking about this perception issue, and you talk about, you know, other healthcare professionals out there like nurses and doctors and all, and you talk about you know, volunteers bringing in patients into an emergency room and they're not in uniform, they're wearing, you know, some kind of haphazard, you know, outfit that they just threw together to get out of their house to go help somebody, and yeah, they were professional to the patient, they did their skills, they know their knowledge, they've got the training and all that, but now you've got this perception of what they look like outside of, you know, EMS, outside of what, although we know what it all entails, what the general public, how the general public perceives that, how
right.
other professionals, how other, you know, healthcare providers perceive that, you
right.
know, and this is why, I mean, I'm a big fan. Okay, you know what, if I understand, you know, I might not agree with the fact that, you know, volunteers should be, you know, out there, and to the fact where, well, you know, communities can't afford EMS. To me, I'm not buying that. But If we have to use these volunteer models, these volunteer EMS system models, because of, you know, financial reasons and whatever, at least I think that there should be some type of requirement where instead of these volunteers responding from their homes in flip-flops and shorts and sweatpants and whatever else they're wearing when they come out of their house to help, they should be, you know, stationed at a building for, you know, a few hours at a time, you know, dedicating themselves for those few hours at a time in a uniform for that volunteer organization, and then responding in kind, you know, like that.
Absolutely.
When I was a volunteer, you know, we did 4-hour shifts. We did 4 hours, you know, you had to dedicate yourself 4 hours. And you did 4-hour shift, and you know, with, you know, 3 to 5 people, wherever, you know, was going to be on that crew, and we were all in uniform. You know,
right.
And part of it isn't necessarily, and you know, you think about it, you mentioned this earlier too, it's not always about wrapped around that appearance end of it. A lot of it is wrapped around the safety end of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you think about going to a scene, you know, and what is a big part of EMS, you know, MVAs and rollovers and hazmat jobs and shootings and stabbings and everything else. You've got blood, you've got metal and plastic and glass and all this stuff all over the place. The last thing you need is people showing up that aren't in uniform or any type of protective clothing, you know, showing up in their house clothes to try to, you know, operate on a scene.
Right.
They are endangering themselves, you know, to becoming patients.
Right.
You know, so I think there's a
lot.
You
know, and I know you don't want to stress, I mean, you said it to me before and you said it during the show that you didn't want to bring the whole show. It's not all about uniforms and the way we dress. And I get that. And I don't want to stress that part, although we're going to keep on coming back to it because it's central, because that's
the beginnings,
the first,
right.
Exactly. That's the first impression. And you only have upward or downward to go from there. So you show up in flip-flops and shorts. My God, that's stupid enough, all right, because of the dangers that you could face in the field, whether it be a rollover, whether it be an MVA where the battery and gas are leaking or anything like that. You know, there's a certain protection that's afforded by full covering. But you show up in the – forget about that part. Where we're talking about is how you're perceived. You walk into the ED and they already think you're an idiot. All right?
Right?
You don't even have to open your mouth. Now, the other part of this is, okay, you have your starched uniform and your spit-shine shoes and you walk into the ED and they go, what's wrong with this patient? And you go, I don't know.
Right. I mean, I actually saw a blog post on this. I couldn't find it again because it was just a random Google search from last week that I last week's show I came across, and it was about a person who was an EMT. They were doing rotations in an emergency room for another position that they're training for, and paramedics came in with a patient, and you know. Were very rude, were very demanding of doctors and nurses, and treating doctors and nurses like they were idiots, and not really representing themselves as a professional, you know. And this person said he was embarrassed to be part of that culture, part of that EMS culture, you know. And pretty much saying that he's seen it way too many times, where he's seen people go into an ER and act like they are due some type of respect, like they are due some type of recognition because they're on the ambulance and they're bringing this trauma patient in, or they're bringing this chest pain patient in, and they've done XYZ for this patient, and now they want this respect. And when they don't get it right off the bat, they start getting, you know, nasty to the staff. You know, and it kind of was just weird with that, and listening to a lot of the responses within that forum post, where most of the people were responding saying, you know, they couldn't believe that this was happening, and then, you know, that guy would ask where they work, and I'm saying to myself, well, this is great, but it goes back to what I think we talked about earlier. About the people that listen to these types of podcasts, not just ours, but other podcasts, and are involved in these
and
EMS
read,
forums
and blog.
Right,
and,
exactly.
Right.
They all care. They're the ones that care. You know, these are the people that do care and that would never do this type of thing inside of an emergency room, whether they're volunteer or they're paid or whatever level they're at. And I think what happens is that this is why I try to stress that, you know, it's up to the individual to try to kind of spread the word. Like, and that doesn't have to be about this show. It can be, hey, did you see that article on XYZ? Are you a part of this forum? Are you part of this forum? You know, there's a thread going on talking about intubation or talking about IV access or whatever it might be. You know,
You know what I'm going to say to this? You know, I mean, already I've repeated myself 1,000 times on this one topic, even on this own show, and I have this one statement that I say about this. You know what it is. We own it.
Right.
We own this. Well, our responsibility is when we see our coworkers standing there, you know, with a dirty shirt or untucked, you know, untucked
right.
shirt or something along that way, or being surly or non-cooperative or not being, you know, we have that, you know, we can't police, it's a difficult line. We can't really, we're not in the position, well, not most of us anyway, are not in the position to say, hey, you know, you can't do that. You have to come to work in a better dress or anything.
Right.
But we can friendly pressure. We can do peer pressure. We can, you know, there's all sorts of things that we can incorporate into that to get that person along.
I mean, I knew a guy who, you know, he used to wear a shirt and the shirt was always stained and people started calling him Gravy Stain as nickname, you know, and instead of changing, he just relished the fact that he had this negative nickname, you know. And it didn't really do anything, you know, for him. And I think that this goes part of what we talked about a few weeks ago about, you know, communication with managers, where, you know, this is where management has to kind of step in and enforce dress codes and enforce, you know, appearance rules and things like that. You know, it's part of that whole thing. Because you have managers and you've got, supervisory level people who view their people and view the organization and want to view it as a professional entity, you know. But if they're not enforcing, like you said, and we've mentioned this before, they're not enforcing that basic first impression of their employees, then how can they try to enforce everything else? You know, it's got to be sort of an all or nothing thing. They can't pick and choose how they want to, you know, enforce the professionalism of their agency. It's got to be, you know, from start to finish. And that goes, you know, from the appearance all the way down to skills and education and continuing education and all that. You know, I was reading an article. It's a long article. It was back in 2010, I think it was. And it was talking about professional development in EMS. And, you know, part of it is they talk about a culture that you have to kind of develop, you know. And the culture could be anything, things like a culture of safety where you're not just putting your seatbelt on and watching how you drive when you're in the ambulance. You're doing it when you're in your private car as well, you know, in your personal vehicle, you know. You know, and having this sort of pursuit of excellence in everything that you do, to kind of have that carry over into your professional life as well as your personal life.
Don't they have a saying, day? I love the word day, but isn't there a saying that something that if you repeat something enough times, it becomes a habit?
Yeah, well, Dorothy did that. She kept saying, there's no place like home, there's no place like home, and then she was home.
No, come on. You know, I mean, there's certain I'm thinking that there's a muscle memory to it. If you do it enough times, it becomes the way that you do
right.
it, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
It's almost like practice makes perfect, but you know what? They have these little wisdoms, these little notes, and there's truth behind them. And that if you do stuff enough times, it's like, you know, I have a partner, you know, and we may not get along like the best in the whole world, but I'll be honest with you, I enjoy working with him. And the reason that I enjoy working with him is not for his personality, but because he cares about the patient, he cares about how he looks, he cares about how we look together, And when we, like, everything from making the cut, you know, there are some people you throw the sheet on and you just, you know, and you roll with it. I've seen people that, you know, the sheet's all undone and it's bunched up under the patient.
And the straps aren't tucked anywhere. Right. They're just kind of laying.
Or they're torn and they're crappy. And it's like we, you know, part of our 800 regulation is we carry spare straps. I mean, I've seen guys, brand new plastic straps that you should be able to wipe down, you know, and they get blood on them, they throw them out, you know.
Right.
And that's, you know, if you have an organization that has that type of money, God bless you, but you're most likely you're going to clean them. But, you know, when the strap drags on the floor just because you've undone it and you're at a dirty MVA and there's a little bit of grease on it, that grease comes off. But even beyond that, how you make that stretcher and you roll in, if you were a patient in a bed and you rolled in and there's this, you know, like sheet half tucked up, you see a mattress underneath and you're like two people, their shirts are undone, what's your confidence level going to be
right.
versus, you know, two people that walk in, they're crisp clean, the cot's made, there's a little towel above where your head goes, you feel that's clean. You know?
I mean, I think part of EMS is there's a lot of customer service that's involved, and I think, like you said, there's some type of confidence you want to convey to the people that you are interacting with.
Wow.
You know, right? Exactly. And one thing that I read is a big part of this this mindset of excellence, this mindset of being a professional, and that a lot of it. You know, this is we talked about this a little bit earlier too. It's about emotion. You know, it's about, like you said, it's about how we feel about what we're doing. You know, if you care, then you're going to take the time to clean off those straps. You're going to take the time to make the stretcher appropriately. You're going to take the time to, you know, take care of your uniform, go to those important continuing education classes, kind of spread the word about articles that you've read and you know, podcasts or shows or videos that you've seen that you feel is going to help your fellow EMS, you know, providers out there. You know, you're going to have that attitude that you want to pass and keep this emotion and this strive for excellence, you know, along. You want to keep it going to the next person, you know. And again, this is the type of thing where you're not going to change everybody. You're going to get people who are going to relish the fact that they're the dirt bag of the crew. You know what I mean? But hopefully if you can get some people to change and some people to recognize that it goes beyond just scooping somebody up and taking them to the hospital, you know, we're going to be able to hopefully get more people involved in getting that perception of us being professionals.
You know what a perfect example? You know, perfect example. And, you know, you and I both know New York State Troopers, all right? But we've also met Jersey State Troopers because we've also worked in Jersey. And granted, you know, for the folks listening, Jim and I are East Coasters, and this is where we've worked, this is where we live. But even Connecticut, I'll even throw in Connecticut. You stop with one of these guys. And I notice I didn't say get stopped by, although that might happen. You know, and then you got to deal with that. However. Your world deals with that, but you deal with these guys, and they all are, I mean, beyond the uniform, which is clean, pressed, sharp, and their chin strap is right across their chin, their hat is tilted the same way and everything else. They don't look at you with sunglasses on. I mean, the whole bit, when they talk to you, they are organized, they
right.
are articulate, and they are direct, and you go, I'm not messing with this guy. He is like going to, you know, he is the authority now. You know, whether you're on this, you're working an MVA with them or you got pulled over by them, they take the scene. They take authority. They take control.
Right.
And it's awesome. I mean, it really is awesome if you think about it. And how does that come by, Jim? Because they've been trained that way. Because there's an esprit de corps, because they're proud of who they are.
Yeah.
And I think that there's – you know, I understand that not enough of us have that, you know, support where we have that esprit de corps. But if we build that up, that has that sort of reinforcing factor, and management notices that, and then they start to support it. You know, you might not even have a dress code where you are, but if everybody starts to agree to dress the same way and look polished and professional, management's going to take notice of that, and they're going to start to say, hey, you know what, this isn't a bad idea. Maybe we should have a dress code.
I mean, think about it. One place that I worked, we used to wear white uniform shirts, and you know, they get dirty pretty quick, you know, in the field, and, you know, and they start looking nasty. We kind of said, well, you know, we should really go to the dark blue uniform shirts. They can keep cleaner, they look nicer, they kind of match with the pants that you wear, and we took it upon ourselves to try to change that dress code, and that actually wound up making people motivated to look better in their uniform because they wanted to wear the darker clothes. They wanted to, you know, they wanted to have that change. They felt that it was a more positive change in an appearance, and that was a positive thing, and got people, you know, motivated to do that.
That goes beyond uniform. I mean,
right.
Although it focused on the uniform, we're talking about an agreement, you know, organizational wide, that people said, we are going to present this. And I'm just wondering, as a side note, did you notice, like, when they treated patients, when they brought patients in, when, you know, they did that whole process of what we're really there for, you know, that patient care aspect,
right?
That pick up.
Well, I'll tell you. I mean, I don't know if I didn't babysit everyone that did that, but I will say that there was definitely an attitude of having this commitment to improve. You know, it seemed that people had this commitment to improve, and it went beyond the uniform. I saw it kind of flow into taking care of vehicles and equipment and paperwork and things like that. So I can only assume that it translated into, you know, some patient care issues and communication with hospital staff and things like that. I mean, I'm going to tell you, when I first started in EMS, I was an EMT. I went from the volunteer. I went into from volunteering into paid 911. I didn't do any kind of transport work. And as an EMT in paid 911, I was doing it. And for me, it was fun. You're lights and sirens, you're doing emergency calls and all that good stuff. And then one day I had a kind of a sticky situation with a patient, and it was like an RMA, AMA type situation. I didn't know what the hell to do. I didn't know, you know, the policies for FDNY, their organization, operational policies and operational guide, and I was lost. And we wound up calling for backup to come help us out and help us make a decision for this patient. And two medics showed up because we were EMTs, so they sent us a medic backup to, you know, be a higher medical authority. And I remember the medics getting there, and, you know, I remember them being so professional and knowing the operational procedures, you know, knowing what to say and how to present the argument to the patient's family, to the police that were there and all that. And I sat there as an EMT and only doing it for a few months, you know, 911, and saying to myself that this is what I have to be. I have to focus on treating this as a profession. This isn't volunteering anymore. You know, now I'm getting paid for this. I have to try to treat this as my job, and I have to know all of these ins and outs, and, you know, kind of being bound to this, I guess, intellectually, you know, to being a course of action I have to take, you know, to make this commitment to the job, to this career.
What a great story. I mean, what a story that absolutely highlights that aspect of seeing what the standards set by others. I mean, you know, and for the flip side of that, you know, we've both worked the system. We've seen some of the guys that can walk out of FDNY. You just got lucky because the standards there, we wish were across the board. But you could have gotten some guys that showed up and were half-assed
right.
about it.
And actually, this is back when, too. This is even back before FDNY took over. I mean, this is still health and hospitals, you know.
Right, even more so, right?
Uniform type stuff, yeah. And I mean, and it's funny because the guy that came and did that, I actually want to work with him years later, and he's actually retiring soon, from Fitney. And he's the type of guy who he knows his job. He's done pretty much everything there is to do in FDNY. He never went to the supervisory role, but he went to hazmat and he went into other areas of Sydney to kind of I guess spread his knowledge and to better use his experiences
He
within.
went to the academy?
I think he went there for a short time. But the thing is though is that this is a person
It's a beautiful thing.
who, when I was a young EMT and I'm just starting out, and you see someone like this who at the time was fairly young himself, and then I remember working with him years later where we had some sticky situations, and I remember kind of hanging back and letting him kind of handle the scene because I knew that he had more experience than me and that he knew this stuff in and out, and I took those cues from him. So that down the road I, cultivated it, and I wound up taking that experience and making it, my own and putting into how I want to
Was
be
it
professional.
so much that you took those cues from him, or was it more that you were like, holy crap, I want to be like that? I like the way he commanded the room. I like his presence. I like the control he had over the scene.
Yeah, I mean, it's a thing where he never got excited on calls, and I mean, I did quite the amount of calls. I mean, he wasn't like he was a stuck up guy either. I mean, he would joke around and stuff, but but when it came to the scene and the patient and the care and all that good stuff, and he was always on the money. And for me, I mean, I was in the military and I came out and I, this is what I wanted. This is the type of thing I've been searching for. I want to see that. I want to be able to be part of something that was organized and that had that type of structure. And I started falling into I guess that mindset of, well, we're running around lights and signs, we're doing this, we're just getting people to the hospital, and I'm saving lives. But there's more to it than that. There is that element of your attitude, and there is that element of, and again, that element of, the uniform, that element of the ambulance you're showing up in, the element of having that knowledge base of knowing what the hell you're talking about.
And the root of all of those elements, the very root, is your mindset. Is
Right.
because you're not going to have a clean uniform, you're not going to have a clean ambulance, you're not going to have well-maintained equipment, you're not going to present your patient case well to the ED if you don't have that mindset to start with to say, you know what, this is for even if you're transitional and this is temporary. There's a lot of sayings out there of if you're gonna do a job, do it right. Don't do it half-assed.
Right.
And there's an aspect of if you're gonna do this job, and you may be paying your way through college, you may be doing whatever. Maybe you're in a system that you have some time to study on the bus, so it's a slower system. There's no excuse for not having the mindset of doing the job as best you can, and starting out that idea that you're going to, this is a professional job. A lot of people take it seriously, some more seriously than others, but there's no sense in not going into it and giving it a giving it effort. I mean,
Right.
if you're not going to go give it effort, you know what? Go to McDonald's. Flip burgers. It may be a couple of dollars. Hey, you know what? It may be a couple of dollars less, but it's going to be a whole lot easier, and you're not going to have to worry about it. Because you want to know something, and this is what some people aren't going to want to hear, but professionalism takes work. And if you're in this job to do the minimal amount of work and just skate by and collect a paycheck, you can pick other jobs that are a lot easier to do,
Right.
even in this economy.
Yeah.
I mean, really, truly, if you think about it, there are aspects of this job that just suck, and you've got to turn around and you've got to turn that into, your, that's what your task is, and you got to execute it and do it with grace and do it with skill and show yourself in a good light.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to put a link to the article that I mentioned. I got to look it up. But one thing that I pulled from it, I thought was something that, interesting to kind of mention, the medic that wrote this article. And again, this is back in 2010, I believe. But he mentioned about how, you know, with challenge in EMS, you know, and again, we've actually talked about during the show, and it was challenged by how we're perceived by the rest of the medical community, you know, and that there's other challenges that we have to deal with also, you know, and again, the challenge from the volunteer versus paid and, you know, things like that. But he mentions how it's up to us as individuals, and this is something we mentioned earlier too, it's up to us, you know, you and me, to choose to be better at what we're doing. You know, and he mentions about how respect is earned. And again, this all goes back to that perception aspect of it, you know, and we have to earn respect by representing EMS in that positive light, you know, showing people that, you know, while we might, you know, seem like we're all alone in what we're doing, you know, we're going to be noticed more and understood more and supported more if we're doing the right thing and we're doing the best that we can and striving to go ahead and get, you know, be that professional and striving to get to that level of excellence that we're shooting for.
Yeah, but even more, I mean, you know, and this is sort of what I've come up with through our conversation right now and what I really didn't give it thought to until, you know, just a few moments ago, Jim, is that mindset. You know, that, you know, listen, there's no doubt there's an aspect of education and follow through on the way you appear and all that other good stuff. But when you have that professional mindset, when you have that sort of idea locked in your head that this is my job, I'm going to do it really well, or I'm going to try to do it really well, I'm going to be up on what I'm doing, I think it helps you really do it better.
I think
it helps you execute better.
Right, and we mentioned earlier too. Part of this, you know, there's a lot of emotion that goes along with this line of work, and I think that's a big part of it as well. You know, and we can go around and around on what's defining, you know,
professionalism.
Right, exactly. But I think in the end, it doesn't really get defined by whether we're volunteer, we're paid, or whether we're, you know, have a bachelor's degree or an associate's degree or if it's a certificate
doesn't
or whatever.
Doesn't matter at all.
I think it goes by, a lot of it goes by the mindset we have, and I think it goes by how we're perceived and, you know, what we're doing to make ourselves better. You know, knowing that what we're doing to make ourselves better. I think by recognizing that, I think we're going to convey and get that perception from people to, you know, wind up having that perception that we are professionals and that we, you know, are doing a very vital and important, you know, job within the medical, you know.
I maybe I didn't articulate it well enough, but, you know, I'm sort of thinking to if you think of things that require mindset, you know, we will naturally turn to sports. You got to have your head in the game. You got to focus on the ball. You got to focus on, you know, where your body is. You got to focus on, you know, where the other team players are and all that other crap that goes on to playing sports well. And anybody who plays any sport knows that, you know, there's a point when you're just joking around with your buddies and you're trying to, and the other end of that is where you're going to win. It's not even you're going to try to win, you're going to win. And it's an aspect of mindset and not mind games, but mind, the mind of a professional versus somebody who's just showing up, that makes a difference in how they end up at the end of the day. I mean,
right.
You know, a professional is going to stop at that MVA, look around them, do a scene safety check, be organized in their thoughts, and know how they're going to approach their patient care. Somebody else might just pull up And then, of course, they could be the statistic you read about in the paper, you know, EMT, slammed by car while aiding, you know, somebody with a flat tire.
Right.
I mean, you know, it does have ramifications that go beyond just how we're perceived. It has ramifications of, do you go home?
Right, exactly. And again, and this is what I mentioned when I talked about that other paramedic, it's that knowledge that you have to be aware of everything that's entailed in your job, and that it's not just about one small aspect, you know, and that being a professional means you have to take responsibility and take stock in everything that you're doing, you know, so that it benefits you as an individual, it benefits your agency, and it benefits, you know, the patients that we're taking care of. So, well, Josh, I think we'll end it there. I think you made some pretty good points. You know, hopefully, I'm hoping people listening to this will maybe leave some comments either on the Blog Talk Radio site or over on the blog at emsofficehours.com, and maybe let us know what they think and what their feelings are when it comes to what defines a professional. Whether you're a volunteer or you're paid, I mean, don't take the attitude of, well, you know, because I'm just come a volunteer, I'm not professional. It's not what we're trying to say here. You know, I'm trying to stress that if you're a volunteer, you being a professional has nothing to do with the amount of training you have. It has to do with how you're being perceived, I think, by other, you know, healthcare professionals out there. So I hope we're not going to be getting a lot of comments, you know, trying to defend the whole volunteer model.
Volunteers or anything else. And if people out there who are listening to this, you know, have that trick that helps them sort of get into the mindset of becoming more, you know, professional,
right,
or address that, you know, that's the type of thing to share as well.
Yeah, I mean, tell everybody a story. Like we told a few stories tonight too. I mean, try to, you know, let us know what it is that, you know, is triggering your motivation even to keep trying to better yourself and to having that dedication and having that mindset that we mentioned to succeed and have that mindset of being a professional and striving for that level of excellence that we need to strive for in this line of work. So
very cool, very cool.
All right, Josh, that's about it. I guess we're just about out of time anyway. So I want to thank. We didn't have too many live people dropping in tonight. So, I mean, again, I don't know if it's that people just don't care or if it's just a matter of it's just not as important as things like getting paid and things like that. But if anybody out there has comments, please post them in the below in the comments section. If you're a little bit shy about posting comments and putting them online, I understand. So you feel free to send me an email. And my email is jhoffman@ems-safety.com. And let me know what you thought about tonight's podcast, or even bring up some industry concerns that maybe you want us to talk about or discuss here on EMS Office Hour. Even if you had a recent call you thought was interesting, I'd love to go ahead and even just kind of focus on a specific call you had and maybe kind of talk about that call and what could have been done better and what other people have done and what we have done and things like that. It'd be pretty cool to start doing podcasts on that as well. So I'll try to fit stuff like that in upcoming episodes here with Josh and share your thoughts with the EMS community as much as possible. So, Josh, thanks a lot for joining me, and I'll see you next week.
Yep. Absolutely, Jim.
All right, everyone, Jim Hoffman and Josh from Wantanu, and we shall see you next week. And as always, stay safe.